As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Would you like to become the headline sponsor of the biggest Manchester United podcast in the world? Would you like to be front and center on Talk of the Devils alongside Andy, Carl, Laurie and Ian? Would you like to reach hundreds of thousands of highly engaged United fans every week? Of course you would. Well, your brand can advertise with us now. Our skilled and charming commercial team are waiting to hear from you. Contact partnerships@theathletic.com. That's partnerships@theathletic.com.
The Athletic.
Again. Now Garnacho! How about that? Here's Fred into the area. After a mistake, and there is the third goal.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletic's podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We're going to react to that West Ham Cup win. We'll also preview the game against Liverpool this weekend as well. But before we get into any of that, we just wanted to start this episode by saying a huge thank you to every single one of you for your messages over the course of the last week or so. And also just for listening and being a part of Talk of the Devils up to this point as well. It's been a brilliant week for Manchester United, no doubt. But it's also been a brilliant week for the podcast too. And we really, really appreciate it. So from myself, Andy, Carl, Laurie, and producer Ollie too, he deserves his fair share of the love. Thank you. And spread the word. Tell your friends. Get them listening to Talk of the Devils. Let's keep pushing. Right, Andy Mitten's with us. Carl Anker's with us. And gentlemen, the last time I saw you, you were walking off into the darkness at Wembley, heading for the fabled Mama Shelter. How was it?
We weren't both heading to the Mama Shelter. We walked off. We got on a tube at Wembley Park. And Carl and I were the only Manchester United fans on the tube. It was full of Geordies. And I heard behind me, whoa, man, look at them shoes.
Where was the guy from?
Just outside Newcastle, actually. That's why there's a slight tinge on the accent. They were looking at Carl's shoes like it was the Angel of the North or that lighthouse in Tynemouth at the edge of the River Tyne. Carl and I both spoke to Geordies right the way into central London. I've got to say, they were absolutely sound, the people I spoke to. Really switched on football fans.
Did they like your shoes?
I did look round when we got off near Liverpool Street, where Carl knew half the station staff. And there was just this Geordie who probably had taken a couple of beers, and he was just looking at Carl's socks. And his brain was like, trying to take it in. I don't know what you felt, Carl. I thought they were sound. They were really switched on football fans. They follow the team. I really enjoyed talking to them.
Absolutely. So Andy gets on and has a word with a couple of Newcastle fans, just wanting a bit of, you know, Andy's a great journalist. And it's always good to get a bit of colour from football fans after a cup final for whatever pieces you want to do. He's having a chat with three of them. I get cornered by two lads who are dazzled by my shoes. and then they're very much like, why are you dressed as a suit? Are you a boxing promoter? who do you fancy in Tommy Fury versus your man Jake Paul? And then I go, oh, you know, I'm a football journalist from The Athletic. And they're like, oh, I love The Athletic. It's boom, 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 boom. George Culkin's amazing. Chris Wolf's amazing as well. And yeah, just had a really good chat about football and what it's like to have your football team go back to Wembley after a little bit of a pause. Okay, a bit longer of a pause if you're a Newcastle fan. But yeah, they were in fine spirits even after the result for Newcastle. And they had many a plan as to what Newcastle should do in the transfer window and fix things. And they were very, very, very keen on stressing that they believe Bruno Guimarães is better than Bruno Fernandes, to which I could only raise an eyebrow and go, all right then, if you say so.
Got to prove it in a cup final for that, to be honest. Andy, you sidestepped the question about the Mama Shelter quite expertly there. So let's go back to it. A lot of people messaged to see how Unite went. Was it as cool as you thought?
Carl and I said goodbye at Liverpool Street and I got another little train into Shoreditch, which was also full of Geordies. And they were arguing about how much the flats they could see out the window of the train cost. I felt like I was in an episode of Sid the Sexist. You know, the cartoon strip in Viz going, why, man, 800 grand? Nah, million? Nah. Didn't you? Nah. So I get to the hotel and I walk in and it's been a long, long day. And it was interesting, as I said. Got voted one of Britain's 10 sexiest hotels the week before. So I had to have a little sit down in reception because there was several things on sale, which you could... Carl, put this better than me. I told you what I saw when I went in there. You could buy pleasure.
Romance options, I think is the best way.
Romance options, that's a better way of putting it.
Yeah, romance options.
Yeah, it was for very open-minded people in that reception. And all I wanted was a pint to check in. And I was still writing non-stop. And I just sat down and had a pint. And I just wanted a pint by myself. And then four lads, Manchester United fans from Chesterley Street. So I think you class that as Geordies. Famous for being the home of Brian Robson and Prefab Sprout. Well, near there. And I just spoke to them and they told me about their day out and I went to bed and obviously the hotel was very sensual, but I had 6 hours sleep and was up the next morning walking through Bethnal Green.
So you had a good sleep?
I had a good 6 hours, but I think I was running on adrenaline. I had a 7 a.m. deadline, it was non-stop, but my overriding feeling was I was absolutely buzzing because Manchester United had won a trophy. Had a really good day on Sunday. Totally different to most of my mates because they ate the beers all day and we were obviously working. But I loved it and took a few days to come down off the high. In fact, going into the West Ham Cup game, I was still tired from Sunday and I'd not even played a game of football. So you could feel maybe why they were deflated. I spoke to a mate of mine, Ant, who you know, Ian, and he said when he got back to Manchester, he felt he'd been hit by a spade. He'd just been on it all day. He said he felt like death warmed up on the Monday after the match. And there were probably a few sore heads on Monday from the Manchester United fans who went to Wembley.
Yeah, they all needed a bit of solo time in the Mama Shelter to recuperate, certainly, didn't they? No wonder Andy was buzzing after that. Emphasis on buzzing. Right, let's talk about the West Ham game, like you mentioned. Before the match, actually, there was a lovely presentation to Casemiro and Mary Earps for getting in the FIFA best, the men's and women's equivalent as well. But Mary Earps, Carl, what a fantastic speech she gave as well at the award ceremony. This is for anyone who has ever been in a dark place. Just know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Keep going. You can achieve anything that you set your mind to. Wow. Congratulations, Mary.
She said, sometimes success looks like this, collecting trophies. Sometimes it's just waking up and putting one step in front of the other. There's only one of you in the world, and that's more than good enough. Be unapologetically yourself.
Boom.
She is a remarkable football player, and Manchester United are very grateful to have her. So signed from Wolfsburg, incredible Euros as the goalkeeper there, and has been a key part of Mark Skinner's slow climb to this maybe, possibly, title race that we're seeing in the Women's Super League as well. Just a remarkable representative of Manchester United and Manchester United's themes. And yeah, it was a very quick presentation with her walking out in her civilian gear and Casemiro in his tracksuit bottoms. because they had to also, you know, parade the Carabao Cup, and also Sir Alex Ferguson had to give David De Gea a hug for 181
hard work,
clean
isn't it?
Sheets.
But enjoying yourselves.
It is hard work. Yeah. It's good. It's good when you're at the top now, isn't it? But yeah, absolutely. Thank you to Mary Epps for everything she said and everything she's done for Man United women's team.
It was a brilliant speech, and I think it applies to everyone. At times, life can be very tough, and she talked about being in a dark place. And, you know, I've been in one the night before, room 243 at a mama shelter, so it was nice to see that the following day. But I get the sentiment of what she was saying. Never give up. Be true to yourself. And good that she's getting the award, Casemiro as well. Lots of awards flying about at the moment.
Yeah, lots of awards and lots of success, like you mentioned, Carl, for Manchester United, including making it through to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. We say often that Erik ten Hag doesn't rotate much, but was it six changes in the end for the game? It was needed, certainly, after all the excitement of Barca and Newcastle. But it did make for a quite laboured performance at times. Is that fair?
Six changes in the starting 11 from that of the League Cup final. Yeah, it was a very lethargic first half. It was a hint of the 2019s. So you had your old problems in terms of ball progression. The central midfield partnership with Scott McTominay and Marcel Sabitzer didn't quite work. And because Garnacho and Antony both want to cut inside, and Wout Weghorst isn't the quickest, there was just sort of a clog in and around certain areas of the penalty box as well. So that needs to get sorted out. I think from now on, Ten Hag will probably play at least two of Luke Shaw, Lisandro Martinez and Casemiro whenever possible. Luke Shaw couldn't play because he has a small injury. I believe he had ice on his shin after Sunday. But if those three are in there, then you should be able to get the ball from A to B pretty good. When those three aren't in the starting lineup, then it gets a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's an issue for United, isn't it? Because the number of games is remarkable. It's in your article, Carl, that's on The Athletic, just how challenging this period has been for Manchester United with all the different competitions. They've played more matches than anyone. They've won more matches than anyone, which is the best thing to know, Andy. But you do worry that it might catch up with them at some point. But the way they finished that match, there's no sign of it just yet.
I was worried watching that game because I thought for 70 minutes, Manchester United looked like it was after the Lord Mayor's show and we were going out the FA Cup. And I was thinking this will be the second time in two seasons that West Ham have knocked Manchester United out of a domestic cup competition at Old Trafford. I was really impressed by West Ham, actually. When you're making that many changes, it's very difficult to keep up the momentum. So you can look at it two ways. The players who do get a chance should seize the opportunity, but players will tell you can't just switch a button and expect to be playing with the confidence of someone who's playing every week in a winning machine. It's not a machine when you take out that many parts of it. And I was disappointed with the way several of the players played in the first half. But to the credit, those late surges as Manchester United pushed for an equaliser was reminiscent of great teams of the past. And to score those three goals in the last 13 or 14 minutes, a couple of magical moments. Garnacho was the best. He was probably man of the match. I thought Casemiro made a big difference when he came on. You just see right there how much of an upgrade with respect to the other players he is. But with respect to the other players, the two loan signings have been needed because there are so many matches. You need them to come in and do the part and to work hard, because if not, Manchester United would have probably looked even more drained. You're going into that game after Barcelona, after the victory at Wembley. You've got to think about the small matter of Liverpool at the weekend. It is non-stop, and Erik ten Hag probably made more changes for that match than any other game, and I was thinking we're not getting away with this. But then I looked at Manchester United's home form. It is absolutely incredible. Since that weird defeat, weird penalty, weird night, the Queen had died a few hours earlier against Real Sociedad in September, I've never seen home form like it. Just win, 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 win. Little draw against Newcastle, who deserved it. Leeds United got the draw as well. But there are a couple of trends that, you know, Barcelona went ahead at Old Trafford. West Ham went ahead at Old Trafford. So Manchester United are surging back, scoring quite a lot of goals. Buzzing we went through, obviously drawn at home in the next round. Par for the course, Fulham. But I just felt a bit drained a bit flat around West Ham, because I just think there's been so many matches and he's not going to stop. Got to be in it to win it. And Manchester United are absolutely in it at the moment.
I thought you were going to break out into a bit of DJ Khaled in the middle of that then, Andy.
All they do is win, win, win. They never stop.
I don't expect you to know that.
You know DJ Khaled, right? In 2000, DJ Khaled. Manchester, is that what he's called, right? Manchester United played in Rio in 2000. And he heard
don't tell me you've got a DJ Khaled anecdote to just squeeze in it.
There's no happy ending to this. I heard a song on Copacabana Beach and it was coming out the back of this big ghetto blasters mounted to the back of like a van. It's one of the best songs I've ever heard in my life. And this was a time before the internet, before Shazam and everything. When I got back, I rang this lady who I knew, Jill Pearson. She's a big United fan, and said, "You've got to get me this song." She said, "What does it go like?" So I had to sing it to her. All I knew was DJ Khaled, and I've never heard it to this day.
DJ Khaled.
Khaled. Is it Khaled or Khaled?
He says his name.
Was he around in 2000?
No, he says his name on every song. DJ Khaled. All he does is
maybe there's an artist called Khaled.
Maybe.
It was... Well, I can still remember the song.
What was it?
That's how good it was.
What was the song?
I'm not going to sing it.
I mean, you have to now.
I'm not going
to
sing it.
The listeners will get it for you.
Nah, I know they will. Let me just try and find it somehow. But yeah, I had it in my mind it was Khaled.
I'll give you a moment to think about that.
You can't set me up.
Why you think about that, Andy, I will say, when Alan Shearer pulled the ball out of the hat and said Manchester United will be at home in the FA Cup quarter final, I got a lot of tweets saying, get Andy Mitten to work out the odds of this happening for the 10th time in a row.
Yeah, it's the 10th time. I ain't no mathematician, trust me. So there's a bit of a sub-argument going on between people who know the stuff, and I'm not one of them, whether the odds are 1,023 to 1 of it happening or 1,024 of it happening. I've got bookmakers telling me one thing. I've got mathematicians telling me another. There's some really, really intelligent Manchester United fans. They probably don't know how to buy a tin of beans in a shop, but they can work out these really complex, well, complex to me. But it's mad, isn't it? 10 consecutive home draws.
If United now continue in the Europa League, I can't remember what the exact figure was, but they will have almost played as many cup games at Old Trafford this season as they have played league games, which just seems absolutely crazy that can happen, especially with the extra game of the last, I was going to call it the last 32, it was the playoff round, wasn't it, of the Europa League. That seems to change every year.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Just to bring it back to last night, actually, Alejandro Garnacho's character to come back from disappointment is really, really, really encouraging me and impressing me. For an 18-year-old kid, the way he bounces back from poor performances or poor moments in games, poor halves in games, whatever it might be. I mean, for a lot of young lads to not get on the pitch even at Wembley at the weekend would have been a huge disappointment. But to react to that by scoring a last-minute winner at Old Trafford just a few days later, especially after having not a brilliant first half by all accounts either, but to take the initiative, to be brave, to be challenging against West Ham late in the game when United needed to come back from a goal down, to produce that moment as well. There's talent there, definitely, but the spirit and the confidence, the self-confidence is really encouraging, Carl, isn't it? And that's my favourite thing about him. including his lovely Justin Bieber blonde mop. Although Slim Shady, I think some of the fans behind me were calling him at Wembley at the weekend.
It's quite funny, isn't it? I also enjoy it when a striker does something like that that makes them just more readily identifiable. For ages when I was watching Manchester derbies and Zinchenko and De Bruyne were both playing, it was just quite annoying to go, which one's which? But now Garnacho's on that. I'm like, oh, great. That's Garnacho. I got that sorted. I know where he is off the ball. Boom, boom, boom. I am reluctant to say Garnacho has it. I am now going to say he has something special, if that makes sense, in terms of...
I think he's got it. I'm willing to say
that. There
you that. Go. I was saying that after the FA Youth Cup final when he just sort of rose to that occasion. And he'd been brilliant already to that point in the competition last season and at youth level. But he's doing it in the first team now.
I said this after the Manchester derby earlier this season, that he's never seen a defender he doesn't want to run at. He just keeps going. And the first half, that was annoying. He was overplaying the ball. There was one point, I'd say midway through, where he's cut inside and Bruno Fernandes is waving his arms out on the edge of the penalty area. And you go, just pass it to him. Let Bruno have a go. But the moment he cuts inside, you know, oh, Garnacho's going to have a shoot. And he might need to wean himself off of that. But he had two or three bits in the second half, especially, where if another player who had that sort of first half would stop running at the defender, and he just kept going. Mm-hmm. And what I like about him is because he keeps going, he's going to get clattered, but he doesn't let it faze him. Ten Hag seems to get quite animated when someone does clatter Garnacho. There was one possible penalty incident that I think started from the outside of the penalty area. And Ten Hag was furious. Then there was a free kick. And Ten Hag was furious again because Garnacho got fouled. And that gave away to Casemiro's offside goal. And that's the sort of thing Garnacho does. He's really good taking the ball out of the air. There were two or three instances at West Ham where the ball comes up and he just goes, good, got it.
The touch for the goal.
Yes, he's got that down on lock. And the way he can maneuver his hips, and he's not lightning fast, but he's got a very good change of pace, means that he's always going to be able to get out that little bit of space to have a shot. And when your shots are as good as that goal, happy days. He's something special.
I think consistency will come with age. Every young player is inconsistent. There's times when he looks better coming off the bench, does really well, and then he earns a start and is a little bit underwhelming. But you're right to mention that touch before the goal. That was a moment of absolute class, and to do it at a really important point during the match as well. He's been a big plus from this season. I was a little bit worried where Manchester United would be. You're not allowed to play Mason Greenwood, for example. Jadon Sancho's been up, down, up, and he has really filled the gap. The winning goal at Fulham was a massive fill-up just before the World Cup final. I was thinking earlier, look where United are now compared to 1 year ago. There was that draw at Old Trafford, a 0-0 draw against Watford, a Watford team who were on the way to relegation, who'd put four past Manchester United before Ollie lost his job. It was a terrible game. Everyone was so flat. Manchester United had been knocked out of European competition, the FA Cup, the League Cup, the Derby was coming. That was a year ago. Lost that game 4-1. Compare then to now, the turnaround has been absolutely massive. And we've often discussed the reasons why, but I was just struck. I just thought, I wonder where we were a year ago. And I thought, oh yeah, it was that Watford game. Fourth worst game in the history of football, officially. Yeah, got voted the fourth worst game ever.
Trademarked it, I think.
There's an award for it at the next match on the pitch. Not had enough awards.
Right, well, if you want to read more about Manchester United's win over West Ham to make it through to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, Carl's piece is on The Athletic right now. There's also yet more information on the takeover of Manchester United, or the potential takeover, with yet more background information from Mark Critchley. Go and have a look at that piece as well. Remember, if you're not a subscriber, you can sign up now for £1.99 a month for a year. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Right then, as if we've not had enough excitement over the last week or so, we're now going to Anfield, or Manchester United are at least, to face Liverpool. And a Liverpool team who are not exactly in the best of moments either, although they may have recovered a little bit just in time for our visit. But let's preview the game then on Sunday. Carl, how are you feeling about this?
I'm not supposed to say I'm confident. You know, I've had enough United fans say you can't be confident before facing Liverpool because form goes out the window, blah, 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 blah. But
are you confident?
Yeah.
What gives you the confidence?
That power triangle of Casemiro, Rafael Varane and Lisandro Martinez gives me strength in a way that I look at Liverpool, in particular in their midfield, and how they get the ball from A to B. And I just think Casemiro and another football player should give them a good old battle. And also, you know, I mean, Fred's scoring goals now. And as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, if Fred can score, anyone can score.
Yeah, he's not quite the figure of fun that he was in the goal-scoring stakes, is he now, with his numbers the best, I think, for ten seasons, maybe?
6 goals since the return of the World Cup.
That's crazy, isn't it?
The problem is, there's no Stretford end at Anfield. That's where he scores.
It's true.
Or the Stretford end, as somebody said to me.
Oh, nice.
Which I quite like.
That's good work.
Well, if Fred scored at the Kop, wow. I'm scarred by too many visits to Anfield where I just don't think Manchester United will win. Last year was horrific, studying that away, and Liverpool scored 4. Manchester United held out for about 3.5 minutes at the start of the match.
I think that was the lowest moment for me of last season. I think the away defeat was even worse than the home defeat, actually, just because you just sort of expected it, really, didn't you? The City home game as well was bad, but the Liverpool away game, it was like lambs to the slaughter.
It was awful, and they were good, and I thought that they would be competing for the title this year. I'm really surprised that they're not, that they're 10 points behind Manchester United. I still check where they are in the league table, I'll be honest, because I know that there's a lot of good players there. I know they've got a good manager. And even every time they win a game, I go, oof, that means they only have to, they're only 10 points behind Manchester United. But that victory at Old Trafford in August was hugely significant. It was needed because United had a terrible start to the season. It was needed because it was against Liverpool. It's a big surprise. But the mood going into that match, I mean, there were protests everywhere, and there are still protests now. But when Jadon Sancho scored the goal, not that I saw it because I was stuck outside in the protests, which were all passing by, I think that set off Manchester United for this season and showed that Liverpool are not quite as indomitable as maybe some of the fans thought they were. They reached a Champions League final last year, and I'd probably take a draw at Anfield on Sunday now, probably. But as Carl says, and as you both say, Manchester United are good enough to go there and to beat them. I'm just stunned that we're 10 points ahead of Liverpool in the league.
Well, yeah, and a draw actually from that perspective is a good result, isn't it? But I suppose the form of United, I mean, you mentioned about that the spine or the triangle, whatever. How did you call it the triangle of Casemiro, Martinez, and Rafael Varane? Yeah, that's the best way.
I said this after League Cup. I said that trio, whoever your front three is as an opponent, you're going to have a real tough time trying to get the ball into the penalty area when those three are ahead of you. So then you've got to go out wide. And if Luke Shaw's fit, that means one option's a lot harder to do, which means you've got to go run down the right-hand side. So, and that means, you know, every now and again, now Wan-Bissaka's going to come down and give you the clamps. So, see, I'm confident. I should stop talking.
Yeah, their midfield has changed a lot. Jurgen Klopp's tried his best to sort of find a formula there and has not seemed to settle on one. It was a totally different midfield last night against Wolves than it was against Crystal Palace. So it'll be interesting to see who selects there. Another interesting aspect to this, Andy, as well, it's buried in the narrative of everything, really, but Liverpool have potentially got 2 players in the front line against Manchester United who could have been lining up on the opposite side if things had been a little bit different this weekend. Darwin Nunez, who I'm still convinced is going to be really good, but he just seems to be missing that last bit where he puts the ball in the back of the net. But he's had some brilliant moments for Liverpool so far this season. Let's hope he doesn't produce one of those on Sunday. And Cody Gakpo as well, who's had a quiet start to life in English football. He scored a couple of goals recently and improved from what he was showing at the start. But that is an interesting dynamic, isn't it? These two going up against United. Ruud van Nistelrooy might have something to say about it.
Not quite the clamour from people saying, oh, we should have signed Nunez and Cody Gakpo, is there? That there was at the time. I remember speaking to Manchester United at the time of the Darwin Nunez thing when the word out of Portugal was that Liverpool had beaten Manchester United to the signing, and I got an emphatic, that is not true. We asked about him, as we do lots of players. We didn't bid for him. Gakpo was a little bit different. Liverpool stats are remarkably similar to Manchester United in terms of goals scored and against in the league. United have scored 41. Liverpool have scored 40. United have conceded 28. Liverpool have conceded 28.
That's really surprising, isn't it?
I know.
It helps when you put 9 past Bournemouth, though. I'll be an oink and say that.
True, and our conceded probably helps that we conceded 10 in matches against City and Brentford, I suppose, but still.
But it's still interesting, isn't it? It's worthy
of
note. I'm just aware of the caged tiger sometimes with them, and I know that they feel exactly the same whenever they play Manchester United. I'm not going to drop into the cliche that form does go out the window, but it is a different game. They're the two biggest teams in English football.
But they never seem to both face one another when both sides are flying, do they? Or if they do, it happens very, very rarely.
I don't think there's ever been a full-on title race between Manchester United and Liverpool. Imagine how much broadcasters and fans would love that around the world. Because as you say, one is usually a lot stronger than the other. One's going through a recuperation phase. Even when Liverpool have finished second to Manchester United, they were always quite a good way off. We've never had that sort of into the last two games, Manchester United against Liverpool.
In the way that it's been Liverpool and City, Liverpool and Arsenal, no, United and just Arsenal, United happened. And Chelsea, whoever, yeah.
And they are the two biggest English teams by a distance. You can make your figures look exactly how you want to make them, but Manchester United and Liverpool are by a distance the two biggest English clubs. I can see some of their fans wobbling. I can see the same divisions among their fans and the same demographics that you see among Manchester United fans. You see people calling their owners out, and I see a lot of people I'd class as hardcore Liverpool fans going, wait a minute, the last 5 years have been absolutely brilliant. Don't be so impatient. So there's lots of side issues there. I see online cranks trying to organise protests outside Anfield on the Walton Brett Road, but they've got no standing or traction in real life, and no one turns up at these protests. So it's an interesting time for them. And the United fans will be standing in a stand where, if you look above, you'll see a massive new stand going above the Anfield Road. That's going to boost the capacity up to 61,000. They've done a lot right in terms of developing the ground. I know they took time to do it, but I think they're a well-positioned club. I mean, Klopp's not having a great season, and I was stunned to see Real Madrid score 5 at Anfield. Found it hilarious, sorry. But we've been there very recently. Oh, it'd be great if Manchester United could win there. It'd be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I totally agree with Andy. This Liverpool are in that transitional season. I don't think they expected it, but anyone writing them off and saying they're not going to be there or thereabouts in the top four, there or thereabouts in the Champions League, in the title race next season, a bit hasty. I think Jurgen Klopp is still a spectacular football manager. I think everyone at Liverpool understands where the area of weakness is, and they have ideas as to how to fix that. So that's good for Liverpool coming back. But also the fun thing, if you're Manchester United, is Erik ten Hag is also a very good manager. And Erik ten Hag probably has been looking at a lot of footage of the space that a certain fullback vacates and going, right then, Marcus Rashford, here's how you run into that and get yourself a goal, just like in 2018. So I'm looking forward to it. The thought Andy just said there about a Liverpool-Manchester United title race week to week, that would make me quite nervous and nauseous if that ever happened. You ever have those games where you're going, oh, that'd be quite nice, and you think about it, oh no, I wouldn't want the idea of a Manchester United-Liverpool Champions League final would make me quite sick in the lead-up to it. I'd be so nervous.
I have to admit, I was listening to the radio earlier on, and they were talking about the prospect of an all-Manchester FA Cup final. Oof. And even that didn't make me feel very good.
No.
I've got sort of bad memories of the 2011 semi-final at Wembley and everything that happened from that point almost. There is something about not wanting to go head-to-head with your biggest rivals in big games like that.
It gives you the shakes, because you can't enjoy it, and even when you win, all you can do is just have like a big exhale, like, fine, glad that's over.
No, a United City FA Cup final, they'll probably move it to Old Trafford because United play all the game. But no, and you're right to mention that game in 2011. Berbatov's missing that, but I can remember just being on Wembley Way before the match, and there's a lot of, you know, ill feeling between two sets of fans. Liverpool being absolutely dreadful started to cost me money. And that's a concern to my family in putting food on the table, because I was booked to go to Madrid for the second leg of the game.
Right.
Everything was planned. Absolutely want you there.
They cancelled you?
They cancelled me. Like, we don't need you. The tie's over. So them protests, I'm going to organise my own protest at Anfield on Sunday. Them scoring five. I was actually watching the game in a Catalan radio station because it was a couple of nights before United Barca last week and he invited me in. And just to see Catalans watching Real Madrid absolutely batter Liverpool was really interesting because I wanted the opposite to happen. And they were like, oh no, Madrid are good. Oh no, Madrid are really good. Oh no, we're playing them three times this month. And I'm like laughing along because Liverpool are getting hammered. And then the next day, yeah, we're probably not going to need you to go to the Bernabeu. Oh no, gutted. Are Liverpool that bad that I don't even know need to go and cover them? But I'll go to Real Betis the day after. There's a silver lining.
That's not bad, is it? I heard more than one Barcelona fan watch that game and watch Real Madrid play really good. And they had the same thought, oh God, no. We've got a Clásico and Real Madrid are in good form. And then I heard one other Barcelona fan say, actually, in a Clásico, it's more advantageous to be the underdog. So there you go. No matter what derby it is, you believe in momentum and reverse momentum as well.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Just one last thing to reflect on them with Liverpool. We mentioned before on the podcast about just how many matches Manchester United have got at the moment. Well, actually, over the course of the season, if they end up getting to the final of the FA Cup and the Europa League like we hope, it would mean that they've played 65 matches in all competitions. They have once played more, which was back in 08-09 when they played 66. That's when they got to the Champions League final. They won the League Cup. They also played in the Club World Cup and the Super Cup, which is why that number was so big. But in terms of a cautionary tale, Liverpool played in 63 matches last season. They won the League Cup, they won the FA Cup, they got beaten in the final of the Champions League. But it seemed to have a big effect on the squad heading into this season. And on Jurgen Klopp as well, Carl. Is it a bit of a warning that for United to be careful what you wish for?
A little bit. You know, it's not just United fans, but also Ajax fans going, I told you, Ten Hag really doesn't like rotating. But I think what happened with Liverpool last season was not only they played loads of football, but their core of players had also reached their sort of late 20s, apex and whatnot, playing high press and heavy metal football. Fabinho in particular got an injury in May. When he came back, he looked a shadow of himself and hasn't really kicked on since.
Are you saying it's just an excuse then, Carl?
I think Liverpool played a lot of football and also have absolutely rotten luck in terms of injuries, and that's what did them at the service. Whereas I can't see United playing 60 plus games, losing one of the best players in their front three, also losing all their central midfielders, also having their best centre defender get injured, and then also have a problem with their fullbacks.
Touch wood. Yes, thank you for doing that.
I think it's a fair point, Ian. I think that this Manchester United team is not fully completed. I think the manager would say that in private. I remember speaking to somebody after the Barcelona away draw, and the person saying to me, yeah, we've still got some way to go in terms of, you know, we still need three or four players. And I just wonder if an injury to somebody like Casemiro, and I think we saw evidence of that in the first half against West Ham, Manchester United are significantly weaker. There's still a lot of football left to play. If you look at the league table, we've still only played 24 matches and got all these Europa League matches, hopefully, if we get through against Real Betis. Best case scenario, when's Christian Eriksen back? April? I remember that was the date given at the time.
End of April.
Well, this season goes on until June. The FA Cup final's in June this year. So, you know, it could come on against City, score the header in the last minute is going to be well into June when that actually happens. Erik ten Hag is, if anything, overachieving. Fourth place in a trophy will do me for this season. But, of course, I'm a football fan. I'm an idiot. And you want even more and more and more. Want to be at the FA Cup final to see Eriksen come back to score the header against Manchester City. Want to be in Budapest. Still haven't totally given up on the league title.
Not again.
Well, yeah. 10% chance of it happening.
You're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance.
Carl?
Before we wrap up, I was just going to say a nice thing about Weghorst. Because
oh, yeah?
Why not? He got what I called a copper hat-trick in the initial edit of the piece I did today on West Ham. So forced the header that scored the own goal to get United's first goal. His block shot led to Garnacho getting the second. And it was his pressing that led to Fred getting the third. So won't show up on any of the stat lines. I mean, at best, it'll show up as an assist for Garnacho or maybe an assist for Fred. But yeah, that was good. Ten Hag said he was one of the best players on the pitch yesterday. And he's really, really enjoying playing for Manchester United in that way of, oh, good for you. You know you're probably not going to be here for too long, but enjoy it. Keep working hard. Nice work.
The first question to Wout Weghorst on Sunday was, could you have foreseen this 2 months ago? And of course he said, no, it's like a dream coming true. But I looked at where he was just before he joined Manchester United. He was at Besiktas. He played an away game at Gaziantep. I think I've pronounced it. Well, I've done my best pronunciation of that. That's actually where the earthquake was recently. But in front of 7,000 people, he's sort of muddling along through games in the Turkish league. And then to go from that to coming off the pitch at Wembley and speaking to journalists with a red, white and black Manchester United scarf around his head. What a moment. What a turnaround for the lad.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And Wout, you know the only way that you can top the day you had on Sunday with that scarf tied around your head, you can go and grab yourself the winner at Anfield at the Kop End this Sunday. That's the only way it can get better. But Andy, Carl, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us on Talk of the Devils as always. Thank you for listening at home as well. And thank you again for all the lovely messages that you sent us over the last few days. We really appreciate it. Remember, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic and you want to know more about some of the articles we've been speaking about today, you can subscribe now at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod and take advantage of that offer of £1.99 a month for a year when you join now. But for the moment, thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.